Welcome to the All About Alts podcast, where we explore the world of alternative investing to help you find financial independence. Join our host, Newview Trust's president, Jason DeBono, as he covers a variety of topics with different guest speakers to discuss tax and alternative investing strategies. It is never too late to start taking control of your financial future, and we are so excited for you to be joining us for this opportunity to hear from some of the best in the business. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the All About Alts podcast. I am your host, Jason DeBono. Happy to be with you today. We got a lot of fun stuff to talk about. And we're kind of going in a little bit of a different direction today, maybe than we normally do. Those that are regular listeners, you know, we tend to do a lot of shows with guest speakers. And one of the things that we've been asked to do a little bit more is, hey, let's talk a little bit more general, right? Let's talk, we understand strategies and we understand, you know, that there's a lot of different ways to go put your money to work in alternative investments, but let's talk a little more about investment accounts. And let's talk a little bit more about saving and let's talk a little bit more about what investments look like as a whole. And so today we're gonna focus on kind of the investment strategy for self-directed accounts. Now, that's a broad term, right? Because self-directed means you direct it. And so the choice is yours, direct it how you please. But I want to highlight for those of you that are either in the market today or those that are new to the investment game saying, hey, I want to be in alts. I just don't know how to enter the market. I'm going to go down and just walk through some of the things that we've seen. For perspective, in the almost 20 years that I've been in this business, we've processed hundreds of thousands of transactions. We've custodied over $2.5 billion of investment assets that we've seen into all different alternatives. We've serviced over 20 or 30,000 different customers over that time and tenure. So it's been a pretty cool perspective to see the world from. And while I don't know what strategy has proven to be the best over time, I think a good, healthy strategy in any approach can be successful, but it is important that you do the right things. We're going to talk a little bit and start off with just this general idea of passive and active, right? This, if you're out in social media or if you're looking up investment stuff, you'll hear these buzz terms, right? It's passive investing, mailbox money, active investing, keep more of your money. And really, there's no right or wrong answer to that, but I want to define those two things. And when we talk about active investment, it means that you are finding your investments, right? You have a far more active role in the investment itself. So I'll give you just kind of an example of active. A single family rental home certainly would be an active investment, right? But it can also be passive. So let's not focus on the asset, but let's focus on why it's active versus passive. So for most single family investments, right? Let's say I, Jason, am going to use my account to go buy one of these properties. I got to go find the property, identify it, negotiate the pricing, figure out if it needs any sort of repairs, if I'm going to short-term rental it, long-term rental it, find a tenant, right? Manage the income and expenses through my account, right? I've got these active responsibilities that are part of this investment both today and tomorrow. Passive investment would be if I were to go buy a pre-built single family rental that had full property management in place. So there are groups that sell turnkey properties and they have full property management. And that would be the same asset class, but it would be a passive investment. So in this scenario, I would still have an active role in due diligence. I'd have an active role in selecting, you know, the turnkey property. I'd still have some activity, but as a general rule, my role is passive, right? I'm reviewing, selecting, purchasing, and then in principle, other than maybe some grand decisions, right? The monthly maintenance management is all handled by a third party property manager. And I get all of those checks, or if I have to make expense payments, are all kind of done on my behalf. So there's a very prime example between active and passive. Now, for most people, I would encourage you to look at both. Some people don't have time to be in the active side and they only want to be passive, and there's nothing wrong with that. And then some love the active role. They do this as a career, as a profession, or they just love it so much that they want to be active in their investments. Again, no wrong answer, but genuinely pause, reflect, and ask yourself, where do I want to be in my investment strategy? And keep in mind that you're not married to any one of these as a long-term. You can start as a passive investor and you can turn into an active investor over time, or vice versa. You can start as an active investor and you can turn into a passive investor over time. So just think through that as an investor, as you're entering this market, or maybe as you're in it, is there also a way for me to be both active and passive, or vice versa, right? So find your niche there. As far as what you buy, how you buy it, what the asset class is, I could give you examples of being a passive investor and an active investor in every single asset class. And I'll kind of just give you guys a quick background on my first foray into investing. So when I started, in this business nearly 20 years ago, I started saving some money and I heard all these people, they were, doing all these investments and I wanted a part of it, but I didn't have a lot of money. Right. And I hadn't saved a whole lot. And so I also was working full time in my career, trying to build a career fresh out of college. And so what for me, the passive role was really exciting. And so I partnered with two mortgage lenders and they found private loans for me. And I did private loans where they packaged them up. And so maybe I was one investor along four or five, and they managed everything through the process. They identified the borrower, they vetted out the property, they did the due diligence, right, and underwriting, and they provided me as a passive investor a full due diligence package, right? I got to see the borrower, all the details, et cetera. And I got to make a loan decision based on that. I collected a monthly income from that on a monthly basis, which was great, but I had absolutely zero responsibility other than the initial review of that investment. And what I loved about it was it solved two problems for me. Number one, it solved the problem of time, which is I didn't have the time to go out and find these deals because it's not easy and it takes work. The second thing it did is it solved a money problem for me because I didn't have enough money to do a whole loan. But it enabled me to partner with others through this one mortgage broker that would package it so I could really solve both the time and the money piece. Over time, I've since gotten more active and been able to find some of my own deals, but I still deploy a very healthy mix of that active and passive kind of world that exists out there. So, whether it be a private loan or whether it be a piece of real estate, whether it be short-term rental, long-term rental, buy and hold, fix and flip, all of those things can be done on the passive or active side. So just think about where you want to sit in that equation. So when it comes to kind of going out and finding some of these deals, I'll just share just some things that I've seen over the years that have worked well for me. And these can help with both passive and active deals, right? Real estate agents, professionals, if you have real estate professionals that you know, put them all on notice. Hey, I'm a buyer and this is my buy box, and call me with anything that you have that fits within it, right? And let them know, hey, I'm a buyer of multiple properties. As a result, I'm going to engage multiple realtors, right? I'm not going to have an exclusive single buyer's agent where I'm just going to come to you and let you find me properties. I'm going to tell you if you see stuff that's outside the normal typical marketplace investment, right? I want to be called. And so building those relationships and that network can be really valuable because realtors want to sell property. And what happens a lot of times is the sellers, the one that approaches the realtor, right, to put it on the MLS, and that seller's agent is the one that you want calling you. And what's nice is they may even be able to sell that property really quick, right? They may even be able to get it at a lower price because they're able to talk to the seller and say, hey, we can put it on the market and we may sell it for X, or I've got an investment buyer that may want 5% off, but they're going to be able to buy it overnight, right? They also may be able to do it with a discounted commission. And so instead of there being a full buyer's agent, a full seller's agent commission, they may be able to combine those two and discount that, saving the seller a few bucks there and making it a little easier for that price to come down. So there's a lot of strategies to deploy there. There are people that are real estate wholesalers. That's all they do. They go find deals. They're door knockers. They go find deals and they wholesale them. So you don't have to be the one finding the deal, right? But you've got to have relationships, be on their email list and be ready to buy. Now you can still be an active buyer, even though you're paying a wholesaler to help you find properties, right? So these are just some additional things we've seen. There's a lot of turnkey property sellers and managers out there. Some of these are build to rent. Some of these groups go buy property, clean them up, put a tenant in them and sell them. So those are very active real estate type investments, but bought and sold in a very passive manner. Investment clubs, groups, associations, depending on where you're located geographically, there's a national association called the National Association of Real Estate Investors, right? So you've got all these different groups out there. Take a look, do a quick Google. It's not really hard to find them, but look in your marketplace. Look and see if they're part of a bigger association or if they're an independent group. You can see if they're for profit or if they're not for profit. And there's nothing wrong with either one, but you just need to kind of know what you're getting into. And I can't encourage you enough to build a good network of people if you want to be an investor, even passively, because you need access to deals. And if you want them actively, you still need access to deals, training, knowledge, understanding. All of those things can be provided through a lot of these investment clubs and organizations and resources. There's websites like Bigger Pockets. There's podcasts, certainly like this one, but this isn't deal-oriented. This is a little bit more knowledge-oriented, but there's tons of podcasts that talk about different deals. Many of those are passive, but every one of these groups is out providing education. Take advantage of it and hone your strategy in. Real estate mentors. There's a lot of people that'll help provide mentorship at a fee. And there's two schools of thought, right? Some people say, why would I pay someone X dollars, right, to be a mentor for me? That seems kind of silly if I can go do it myself. And then there's other people that say, hey, why in the world would I try to figure all this out on my own and make mistakes for X dollars per year, per month, per deal? I can have a coach in my corner. And, you know, I'm always reminded of the fact that at his peak in golf, Tiger Woods never fired his golf coach, right? So you've got to kind of think about that. If the greatest golfer in the world has a coach, right, why wouldn't we as investors at least look and try to find some sort resources or different ways to get some of that mentorship, even if it does cost some money? But again, anytime you're spending money, make sure it's the right move for you. So when we talk about active and passive, you know, we're talking a lot about individual assets, right? One-offs, you're buying, you're selling, et cetera. There's kind of a secondary world that exists out there that gets even broader. And this is the area of alternatives that I want to continue to help shed some light on, because I think it's a great way for people to enter into the real estate or private note or private equity space, this true alternative asset kind of group that we talk so much about. But it's a way to do it through the expertise and experience of other people. So if we look at most passive and active investments, right, we tend to think of them in small scale. We're just going to open that scale up and think of them in a larger scale. So if I think about when I want to go invest into different types of assets, there's assets that are packaged up like stocks or securities. Now, they fall under security exemptions, but ultimately, they look more like a packaged investment. So if you think about the world today, if I want to go invest into Microsoft, that's a packaged investment, right? It's clearly defined. I know what I'm buying at a high level. I'm investing in enterprise of Microsoft. And I can do that through my financial advisor, or I can do that directly. And I own shares of Microsoft. Now, that's in some ways an active investment because I've got to think through the diligence piece, but it's a very passive investment, right? The stock market is a passive place. And what I'm looking for is I'm looking for Microsoft to be successful. And the more successful Microsoft is, the more successful I will be. If I translate that same strategy and concept to the alternative world, I can make investments very similarly through syndications or funds that are private. Now, again, these aren't stocks as a general rule because they usually have an exemption from being considered a security. But for lack of a better term, they look a lot like a stock. If you think about it, I'm going to go and invest into some business operation, right? We've used Microsoft as the example, that's, let's say, in the real estate world. And the more successful that asset or investment performs, the more successful my return is, just like the more successful Microsoft is, the more successful my return is as a general rule. So when we enter into the syndication and fund world, what we're doing now is we're getting into far more passive investments, right? This would be even more the definition of a passive investment. And we're getting into a lot of different ways to enter into much different and bigger markets. So when we talk about issuing a private loan or we talk about buying a piece of real estate, in most cases, those things are geographically constrained. when we get into syndications and we get into funds, those things can be national, they can be international. They're just taking a much different play on what we're doing. I also will kind of analogize those back to the market in that you can have kind of a stock, right? Or you can have a mutual fund, which is a series of stocks. And those examples exist in the private equity, private investment, syndication, right? Fund, you'll hear lots of different words, this space that exists out there. So if I want to invest into a syndication, I can invest into a syndication that has just a single asset, right? It's one investment, one deal. I know what the deal is ahead of time. I'm able to see it, right? Touch it, feel it. So someone can say, we're buying this self-storage unit, this apartment complex, or whatever that asset may be. That looks a lot more like Microsoft, right? It's one asset, one strategy. There can also be multi-asset strategies, right? It's five properties that are going to be put into one deal. It could be existing properties that are packaged up. It could be new properties. It could be properties to be defined based on geographics. It could be properties to define based on asset class. And then you can get into some of these blind pools, not that blind pool meaning in a negative connotation, but blind pool meaning you don't know what's going to be bought, right? So these larger investment funds may be in perpetuity, like they raise money and they'll continually add assets, or they're going to raise $100 million, $50 million, and they're going to buy 3 to 7 properties in these geographic areas. So you understand the strategy, but you don't actually know how they're going to be executed until each deal pops up. And some of these may take 3, 6, 9, 12, 18 months till the full investment strategy is realized. So again, you can get in deliberately, you can get in a mid-made, you know, way, and then you can get in an area where you don't know any of the assets. Just like looking at Microsoft, you have to follow a very strong due diligence process because you're investing in someone else's business. So when it comes to due diligence of these types of assets, you're really doing due diligence on two separate things. You're doing due diligence on the people and the strategy, much like a stock. If you're doing due diligence on Microsoft, you're doing due diligence on who's running Microsoft, right? Do I have faith in those individuals? Does their track record support it? And then secondly, what's their strategy, right? Is Microsoft's offering what I think is going to be worth more down the road? And if you look at a private investment, whether that be a syndication or that be considered a fund or however it may be packaged and structured, you need to make sure that you have confidence in the operators. Who are the groups, the teams, the masterminds behind identifying the properties, underwriting? Have they done this before? What's their success rate been? How do they work, et cetera? And then the second thing is, what's their strategy? So if you're going to invest into a strategy that's a multifamily asset class, do you believe in the asset class? If they're in office or if they're in industrial, do you believe in those asset classes? Because even the right people with the wrong asset class strategy cannot necessarily be the right investment for you. So when we talk about funds and we talk about syndications, again, we're using those terms loosely, not to define an investment, but to define a grouping of investments. There's a lot of different things that you really want to step in and take a hard look at and make sure you're comfortable with. So we talked about the operator and the strategy, but let's dig down to the asset class. Is it multi-class, right? Are they buying a little bit of this and a little bit of that? Or are they only buying one type of asset? Are they buying in one geographic area or are they buying all over the country? These are all different layers of diligence that you're going to want to do and make sure that you feel comfortable with as you enter into that space. Is this right for you? The one thing about passive investing through syndications and funds is that you really have to feel comfortable that you've got the right balance and mix of strategy and people behind it, because that's ultimately what you're investing your dollars into. Again, no different than when you put your money into a Microsoft or into Uber or any other product, right? Do you believe in it? And do you think the right people are making the right decisions? A couple of the things to talk about on the private investment world, especially in the fund and syndication side, is you've got a few different strategies, right, that are like sub-strategies inside the strategy. So the first one is development, right? Are these development deals? Well, development deals mean that they're buying land, right? Acquiring land, entitling that land, making sure it's zoned properly, getting plans approved, and then constructing, right, something on that site. So if their asset class is development of real estate or self-storage or industrial, right, they've got a lot of processing that goes into that. Typically, in a development deal, there's not a lot of cash flow, right? Because you're not buying monthly payments, because what you're buying is this, right, bricks and sticks, and hopefully it becomes something on this piece of land that's worth something. And the combination of those two things, fully rented, is going to make the property worth more money, right? Those are development deals. Most development deals really have their payout at the end, right? They want to get it built. They want to get the properties acquired and entitled. They want to get construction done, up, running, and they want to get at least to a point where they can make a good, viable exit. And again, development deals are great opportunities, but they aren't going to bring you in cash flow. So if that's important to you, it may not be, you know, the right cup of tea. The second thing is that they take a little bit longer, right? You've got land purchase, entitlement, zoning, construction, lease up. So usually exits in those types of deals are going to be much longer hold periods. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but you've got to know if that lines up to your strategy. The second types of deals that we see are value add. Now, value add's a pretty catch-all term, but value add means that it's bought with the intention of making it more valuable. Now, we see value add in a lot of different ways. I'll give you some examples. A lot of value add is done in Class B and Class C multifamily, right? Or any other property, but multifamily especially. So if you think about the nature of how investments work, right, there's properties that age over time. And as they age, right, they don't become worth as much. So if you were going to go out and rent an apartment, chances are you're going to pay more for today's apartment built in the last 3 years than you're going to pay for a garden style apartment built in 1985. Right? Even if it's been refurbished, even if the units have been updated, it just doesn't have likely the cachet that a 2021, you know, new build high rise apartment is going to have. So it's going to be a less expensive opportunity as a result, right? It may have a lower valuation. So what we see is we see a lot of these Class B products, right? Class C products, multifamily, we see it a lot in self-storage where they come in and rehab them. And what they're doing is looking to simply push the rents back up. So a lot of that has to do with refurbishing, a lot of capital expenditures called CapEx. But the whole idea of this is to go buy an apartment for, let's say, $3 million based on the current cash flow, kick the cash flow up 30% or 20%, either by renting out more units, right? Renting them for more money, adding in amenities that allow you to raise rent, finding additional opportunities to drive revenue, i.e. adding Wi-Fi or having different things on site, maybe putting in a gym that wasn't there or upgrading the pool. All of these things that cause occupancy hopefully to go up and the average price per unit to go up. As a result, that property generates more revenue. And in the commercial world, the value of that property is based on the revenue it generates. And so hopefully, right, you can take that $3 million apartment building, put a couple million dollars of value into it, and maybe have it worth $6, $8, $10, $12 million based on rising rents in that market. So that value add is something that we see a lot. A lot of syndications are tied to value add. In those cases, there can be distributions. Sometimes there's not, or at least maybe not in the initial part, but there's more likely to be, it may not need to be held as long as a development deal, right? Till there's an exit, whether that be a refinance exit or a sale exit. But understand that what you're investing into is really the value that the operators of that asset can add over time. And the more they can make the property generate income, the higher the valuation is, which is obviously what everybody's looking for in a real estate deal. The third way or third type of investment that we see is cash flow. These are very common, right? Where people are just buying cash flow. So they'll acquire different assets, right? And they're doing it just for the cash flow. They have higher payments per month. So they'll have like a high monthly dividend of cash flow. And they may not be properties that are going to generate massive gains at the end. So in a value add, you may have very little revenue that you earn month by month as an investor, but you want an exit at a higher number and that drives growth. In a development deal, there's very little cash flow to ever be distributed because it's literally, you know, dirt and bricks and sticks. And so you're really buying this exit in terms of it being worth more because it's newly constructed and now you can sell it. In cash flow properties, you're really not buying them because you think that you're going to make 20% year over year on the asset value plus cash flow. You're buying and saying, hey, I'm going to make good cash flow. Hopefully it's a good quality asset with good quality tenants that generate revenue for me as an investor. But we're not buying it much of a discount. It's already in pretty good shape, meaning there's not a lot of value add that we can do to it. So other than just typical rising rents in a market, we're not going to see the value jump significantly. But that's a strategy that you buy because you know that. You can almost think of some of these when you look at stocks at different, like large cap, small cap, right? You're not buying a large cap expecting it to go up 30%, but you're also protecting your downside because you know that Walmart is likely going to be a strong producer for many years to come. Where on the other side of that, in the small caps index, you may be buying investments that can bump 30%, right? But there's a little more risk to take on. And that's when you get into more of the value add and development deals where, hey, these are longer holds, but there may be a bigger pop in any one of these deals. Whereas cash flow deals, you're typically buying more comfortable, more stabilized assets, and you're using the asset to generate a yield for you. There's another kind of step, right, towards more institutional level assets. Now, you'll hear that term thrown out, right? Everyone kind of says this is an institutional grade investment, and I don't know how true that is across the board. But what I can tell you is there are full-blown, large-scale, huge businesses that all they do is create institutional level asset. And those assets can be bought by individuals, usually through a financial advisor. Some of these syndication deals, some of these larger institutional assets will have some requirements that require you to be considered an accredited investor or high net worth investor. That means that you cannot buy any of these assets unless you have $1 million of net worth, excluding your primary residence, or $200,000 of individual income, $300,000 if you file jointly in the preceding 2 years with an expectation to keep that income up. Now, accredited investor simply means in the eyes of the SEC is that you can afford to for that investment to go bad, right? A lot of these private assets in some ways are conceived to have more risk. I'm not sure I believe that in all cases, but as a general rule, right, they're maybe a little more riskier investments. And these investments do require you to be considered high net worth. Now, there's also some Reg A exemptions and some state level exemptions that may allow and require you to have some sort of net worth requirement, but at a significantly lower amount. So there's a lot of different crowdfunding platforms and that have this kind of quote unquote institutional grade assets. And each deal may be different by whether or not they can accept your investment into it based on the percentage of income that you make in a year or based on the state that you live in has different guidelines. So understand that there are some restrictions in the private investment world that may not allow you to invest, may restrict the amount you can put in relative to your income or net worth, or may just simply not even let you participate in any way, shape, or form. So understand that all of those different rules and regs do exist. They are out there. None of us have any control over them. And what ultimately is the decision of the issuer of that investment is they have to decide how much regulation they want to deal with. The more regulation that and scrutiny they put their investments under, right, with different regulatory bodies, usually the more open the offering is. So in order to be the most open, right, which is to accept money from anyone, then you've got a lot more filing requirements, a lot more things that they're going to have to do. And there's no right answer. Just because someone wants it to be a smaller fund that's accredited investors only doesn't make it a bad investment. Doesn't mean they're hiding information. It just means that in their investment philosophy, they just would rather go at it through that approach. And so, again, ask those types of questions as part of your due diligence to these groups is who do you report to, right? What type of offering is this? Do I need to be accredited? If I do, to what degree, to what standards, maximum accreditation, or is it an estate accreditation? So all of these things are, questions that you want to be asking. So let's kind of highlight, go back and do a little bit of cliff notes, right? As an investor, as you can tell from the last 30 minutes or so, there's no shortage of ways to get into the investment world. You can go buy direct investments, right? More active role. You can buy direct investments in a more passive role. You can go work through operators and businesses that help package up investments through funds and syndications. You can find institutional level offerings that are sold a lot of times through financial advisors. Usually the advisors that are representing alternative product tend to have an independent relationship with their broker dealer, or they are an independent broker dealer firm, or they're an RIA. So you want to ask those types of questions when you're out looking. If you want to hire an advisor to go help you find these investments, that's a great strategy. But make sure that you ask the advisor, you know, how many alts do you offer? What different types of alts do you offer? We work with advisory firms that have two alts and that's all they offer. And we work with advisory firms that have 200, right? And so you have access to more, but more may not be better. All these are questions that you want to be thinking through and talking to and asking the professionals that you think are best to help you get from where you are today to where you want to be on your investment strategy. Because this is a long race. We're not going to solve everything overnight. But if we want good diversification, and if we've got money that we're looking to get out of the market exclusively, then understanding these funds and syndications and direct investments and all these different groups can be a great way for you to get a toe in the water or start stepping into that pool of understanding of how the alternative space works. So, as always, you know, we're going to continue to be here to drive education. Hopefully you find this podcast to be a valuable resource. We'll get back on, you know, in the coming weeks on having some guest speakers talking about different strategies so we can make sure that we're not just a talking head here, you know, telling you what we see, but bringing in different things that not only give you insight into the world that we occupy and the space that we live in, but also helping us get better insight from some of these external groups and organizations that have just a different viewpoint over the same strategy that we're all talking about today. So I hope that you'll continue to listen as we drive education forward about investing in alternatives. As always, you can email allaboutalts@newviewtrust.com if you have different topics or ideas or guest speakers. We'd love to hear it. We always want more quirky questions of the day. So please send those to the allaboutalts@newviewtrust email so we can keep those coming. Always one of my favorite part of the segments when we have guest speakers on. And as always, please be sure to hit that like, share, subscribe button. We want to keep you as part of this community of investors, all geared with just learning more about alternatives and hopefully getting some practical insight to make some practical investment decisions in the long term. So as always, happy investing and thanks for tuning in.
Thank you so much for listening. We hope the information within this podcast has given you the tools that you need to find your way to financial independence. We would love to partner with you on this journey. Text ALTS, that's ALTS, to 407-708-1853 to learn more about how to get started today. Don't forget to follow us to make sure you don't miss a second of content, and we'll see you next week.